You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. If you missed your favorite program, don't worry. You can listen to podcasts of our program at cjsf.ca.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Welcome, dear listeners, to New Dimensions Radio. Today, we'll delve into nature meditation and how deepening our connection to nature can profoundly influence our well-being. Joining us is Mark Coleman, a mindfulness teacher who has been meditating for more than 40 years and teaching for more than 25 years. He currently teaches at Spirit Rock Meditation Center in Northern California and conducts nature meditation retreats all over the world. He's the author of A Field Guide to Nature Meditation, 52 Mindfulness Practices for Joy, Wonder, and Wisdom, and Awake in the Wild. Join us for the next hour as we delve into how mindfulness in nature can be a source of joy, healing, and discovery with our guest, Mark Coleman. I'm speaking with Mark from his home by remote connection. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks so much, Travis Glenn. Very delightful to be here with you and on New Dimensions Radio.
So good to see you. I'm looking forward to talking about the unique experience that nature offers us. But first, I'm wondering if you can share a bit of your personal path growing up in England before you became a mindfulness teacher.
Yes. So I grew up in Northumberland, which is northeastern England on the Scottish border. And I had the pleasure of growing up close to the coast and close to the woods and farmland, and spent a lot of my misspent youth running around farmers' fields and the coastline and in the woods, often getting into trouble, but really enjoying being outside. And I think those years were very formative, as I think they can be for many of us. When we spend time outside as kids, we develop a kind of a kinship and a relationality with nature that's not even conceptual or thought about really, but it's just in my bones that I was just enjoy being out in nature, biking and running around and exploring and adventuring. And then I moved to London and got into the punk scene, and I was a student, and like many people that age, I was confused and angry and frustrated with what I was seeing around me, and became an anarchist, got into the punk world, got into squatting, and was very much politically motivated to try and bring a more just system, in this case to England. But I was also very unhappy, had a lot of anger, a lot of rage, and I was looking for, I didn't know what I was looking for, but I was looking for something to help figure life out, myself out. And I happened to stumble upon a Buddhist meditation center in the East End of London, Bethnal Green, in the early 80s, which there wasn't a lot of meditation around. Mindfulness was not known, and it was obscure. And I stumbled in with my white mohawk and wild self, and immediately felt a sense of homecoming. And I started meditating, learning mindfulness meditation and a loving kindness practice. And it was transformational in that, being given tools to learn how to be aware of my own mind rather than just purely focusing my attention externally and judging and blaming externally, and actually seeing so much of my own struggle and strife and anxiety and suffering was really self-created. That really lit me up inside. I dropped out of college. I moved into a Buddhist center. Eventually, after many years, traveled to and spent a lot of time in India and Southeast Asia, learning from other teachers in the Buddhist tradition. And then eventually made my way to the States, to California. And backtrack a second. So when I learned meditation, the connection between meditation and nature seemed very obvious. When I was in London, I would go to the parks as a place of refuge, and they provide the same kind of solace and nourishment and beauty and stillness that I would find in my meditation practice. And then similarly, when I came to the States, which has amazing, amazing wilderness and beautiful wild lands, something to an order that I hadn't really felt in England, the deserts of the Southwest, the Rocky Mountains, Sierra Nevada in California. And it just really awoke something in me. And so I began to spend more time outside, hiking, backpacking, doing my own personal retreats outside. I was doing a lot of Buddhist retreats, which are primarily indoors in a center or monastery, and learning to integrate meditation in nature and the wilderness. It just became so natural. And I realized that all the things that I was learning from Buddhism and other wisdom traditions was so evident, so revealed naturally outside in the wisdom of our connection, our interconnection, our interdependence, the changing ephemeral nature of experience and life, the natural cycles of birth and death, and just many, many things that were just so accessible. And so that became my orientation. And then I started teaching in the late 90s. And in the early 2000s, I was invited to teach a 10-day backpacking silent retreat in the Navajo country in Southwest. And it was profound. It was beautiful. It was serene. And for the people who were with me, about 20 people on this trip, also profound. And I realized, oh, this methodology, if one of a better word, of integrating nature and meditation, silence, mindfulness, was a very powerful vehicle. And then since that time, it was probably 20 years ago now, I spent most of my life leading nature retreats, wilderness retreats, nature programs, integrating mindfulness. It's been my love and my passion, my joy, and my also way to serve, to help people wake up to this beautiful earth through the doorway of mindfulness, meditation.
It seems such a natural extension for you, given what you shared about your childhood, growing up more with nature around you. And I want to go back to one provocative thing you said, and that's, was there a tension for you, or was it an ease when you felt yourself shifting from being a punk and an anarchist into going into that first meditation retreat?
Possibly. The similarity or the confluence is that punk and anarchy and sort of my anti-establishment sort of activity was against the stream. And the Buddha talked about his teaching, mindfulness, awakening, as also going against the stream, against the stream of normative culture and views. And so in that way, there was a confluence. Meditation is kind of a revolutionary act. And living a life of simplicity can be revolutionary, and letting go of the forces of greed and consumption violence is a revolutionary activity. So in a way, they seem very, very contradictory, right? This sort of loud, colorful, rebellious punk going into, you know, a silent, contemplative practice and tradition. But they actually both had their counter culture, counter normative orientations.
And movements in a way of wanting to do something better, make something better, more move towards something else.
Right, right. One being more internal, one being more external. I mean, they can have both, each can have both dimensions, but Buddhism's definitely about, you know, clarifying, understanding the inner life to not create suffering and to, and then to also bring that into society. Yeah.
And part of your gift to the contemplative tradition really is drawing the threads between nature and what already exists and is offered to us as a form of support in addition to supporting the Dharma and what might be offered there. So I like how you talked about on this one retreat in the U.S., you started to see those connections more. And so I'm wondering, was that the moment that really ignited the part of you that says this is inseparable from what we're doing and can actually be supportive versus meditating in a hall per se or meditating in one's home?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, of course, many beautiful things that happen when we meditate at home, indoors, in a meditation hall. And I've spent many, many hours, months, years in beautiful meditation halls, temples, and they're lovely. And yet, you know, for thousands of years, most people, most of the time, from every spiritual tradition, we're spending most time outside, meditating outside, and long history of various traditions of people going to the desert, to the mountains, to the caves, to the forest, for solace, for contemplation, for nourishment, for regeneration. And I think there's something very wise about that, that there's the, when we immerse in nature and the natural world becomes the predominant influence rather than a sort of human-centric culture, then I think it starts to reawaken, you know, what we know deep in our bones, right? Because evolutionarily speaking, we grew up in intimate relationship with the wild, with animals, with flora, with whatever ecosystem we were in. Yeah, so, you know, people, you know, throughout the ages have sought refuge in the mountains, in the forests, in the deserts, in places of natural beauty, in spiritual traditions or not. And I think there's been a, you know, just a deep understanding that that immersion in the natural world is a way of reminding ourselves, remembering ourselves, our nature, which is we are embedded in the natural world. We are of the earth. And that's part of our heritage. And it feels so imperative to be doing that at this time because we're so removed. We spend 95% of our time now indoors and 11 hours looking at a screen. So, yeah, so that movement to taking ourselves outside, meditating outside, or just being mindful outside is a way to sort of rediscover our essential connection and unity.
I'm speaking with Mark Coleman, author of A Field Guide to Nature Meditation. If you want to know more about his work, you can go to markcoleman.org. That's markcoleman.org. Or you can get there at newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Severa. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Mark Coleman, and we're talking about how nature meditation can introduce us to the concept of connecting deeply with the natural world. And Mark, you write about some of the significance of the four seasons, of being in one place over an extended period of time and what this can teach us. And I'm wondering if you can talk more about that.
One of the, you know, joys of being alive and being on this earth is we get to witness the earth and the natural world in all kinds of, you know, processes and flows and different states. And for most people, not everybody, not in every sort of ecological zone, experiences the four seasons. Sometimes some places in the tropics, it's often more like two seasons, the rainy season, the dry season. We have the beauty of experiencing life and the earth in these wondrous, evolving palettes of experience. And when we're rooted in place, or we live in one place, and we get to see the different dimensions of nature, you know, and of course, nature is a mirror. And the name of my first book, Awaken the Wild, Mindfulness in Nature is a Path of Self-Discovery, it mirrors back to us, ourselves and our experience. And so the seasons in the earth are no different than the season in life. You know, in spring we have the sort of the arising, the emergence, the growth, the bounty of life emerging from the dormancy and cold of winter into spring, and its ebullience and the beauty of, you know, seeing fresh, like where I am now in California in spring, there's this emerald hillside, this beautiful grasses growing, wildflowers, the California poppies are emerging, and the oxalis and other beautiful flowers that carpet the hillsides. And we get to see the range. And then of course the summer, we get to feel that sense of abundance and fullness and fecundity of the earth and the generativity and the generosity of the earth. And then fall, the season of, and it's more contemplative, and the season of letting go and poignancy and the seeing of the land going back into sort of a regenerative mode, and then winter, the dormancy and the beauty of frost and icicles and snow and glitter of sunlight. And it's a beautiful way to continually be re-enchanted with the earth, and it can enchant us in so many ways and so much variety with that seasonality. And so one of the things I like to remind myself every time I step out my front door, because when we're indoors, we mostly forget what season it is. We go outside like, oh, it's spring. I had no idea. I've been working, looking at emails for 8 hours. Oh, right. I see the blossoms on the trees. I can smell the air. It's lightly sweet. I can hear the songbirds returning from their winter migration. And it's, you know, it's also a sort of a bringer of joy.
I really appreciate the reminders and what you're evoking in me as I listen to. And that was exactly what I was thinking about, is I'm indoors a lot. I do often forget what season it is. And so I'm wondering what extra practice you might offer me so I don't become so habituated and numb to the cycle of the seasons that you just spoke of.
Yeah. Well, in the book, there's a meditation for each season. I was originally going to do the book around the seasons, but I was too challenged by coming up with 13 different meditations for each season. Possible, but I chose a different path. My mantra with my work to people is go outside, go outside, go outside. So that's the practice, right? Coming away from the screen, getting out of the front door, even if it's rainy, I love to hike in the rain. Even if it's cold, we bundle up, and just having some connection and immersive contact with the outdoors. And it might just be you walk into your garden, or you step outside and you walk a couple of blocks in your neighborhood, Or maybe it's too cold or rainy and you just look out the window and you take in the cloudscape or the light or the flight of birds or the movement of wind. And it's a question of reorienting our attention from ourselves or from our stuff or from our screens mostly, and realizing we're always embedded in this wider ecology, ecosystem, and then to be curious, well, what's happening now? Like I have on the telegraph pole outside my house, there's a crow, and every March, he builds his nest in the oak tree just in front of me. And in February, the Buick's wrens start coming back and the song sparrows, and I'm just delighted by morning song of birds. And then in January and December, the herring come into the bay, and then the cormorants and the pelicans are diving for months trying to get to the herring. And so we can begin to go outside and begin to be curious. And that's a simple way of being mindful. So the encouragement is just to go out, be curious, notice what is this season? What is this place? What's happening in my garden that's telling me about the natural world and the cycles that we mostly lost touch with?
This is really a different idea of meditation and awareness for me, that I've been so used to sitting on a cushion and really just having one focal point, either something visual in front of me or focus on the breath and my internal experience. But you really seem to be offering something more and even more expansive in all the points that you're saying are available for us to consider.
Yeah, so, you know, there's different kinds of meditation and there's different ways to meditate. But if we reduce that to its essence, you know, particularly in the mindfulness sort of in the pantheon of practices, mindfulness is simply being aware, paying attention in the present moment. So we can do that in meditation in a formal way, and we can build up that quality, or we can step outside and be equally present, equally mindful as we watch a bird feeding, you know, on the grass, or as I was doing watching the gray heron waiting patiently in the marshes, waiting for a little, you know, a little fish to swim by. So in any moment, we can be mindful. Any moment, we can be present. You could call that a meditation. It's a moment-to-moment meditation. But I prefer to say it's what's more important than the meditation itself is the qualities that come from it, which is a meditative presence or meditative awareness, which we could also call mindfulness. And so when we go outside, what's beautiful about integrating mindfulness in nature is it's pretty effortless. And mostly when I'm instructing people, I say, let's first relax, just relax, and then notice how nature and the natural environment around you is drawing you into the present. Maybe you feel the wind on your face or the sun warming your back, or you're smelling the fragrance because you're near some marshland and it has a saltiness. Or maybe you're feeling your body, you know, resting on the ground, or you're feeling more alive because the oxygen's so fresh. And so the practice is really just simply relaxing and noticing how moment to moment this thing's happening, sounds, movement, wind, breeze, fragrance, light, bird song, animal movement, leaves rustling. And we're just being present moment to moment. And that's quite easy. It's accessible. It's delightful. Anybody can do it in any moment.
And what I'm hearing again contrasts with some of my other perhaps misconceptions about mindfulness and practice. And that is, instead of denying our sensory experience, you seem to be saying, let's embrace them more fully. Let's take each one and see what it can tell us in our field of awareness.
Yeah. And so mostly what I'm orienting people to do when we're outdoors in that mindfulness context is we're cultivating a quality that's in the tradition is called open awareness or spacious awareness or sensory awareness, or in psychology it's called open monitoring, where rather than focus on a single point like the breath, which is a very common meditation object, we're actually open to receiving the full sensory world. And when we're outside, that sensory world is very alive, very dynamic, very accessible, and it's constantly basically pinging us, you know, with breeze, with smell, with sight, with light, with color, with movement. And so we just have to sit quietly or stand or lie and just let that, take that in, and just keep our attention attuned to that present moment experience. And then the only main instruction that I give on top of that is notice when you hear the sound of the bird, you don't then suddenly start thinking about the bird and what color it is and where did it fly from. So you notice when your attention's wandered off into thought, as it does all the time. And we come back and I have people ask the question, and what else is happening? Oh, now I can feel the change in the temperature as the sun's gone behind the clouds. And now I feel the breeze coming from the southwest. And now I sense an ant tickling my bare skin, and on and on. So it's a very beautiful, very fluid, dynamic, and very accessible way of being in nature.
And are you suggesting that this experience is available no matter which version of nature might be closest to us? Some are in the desert, some are in the redwoods, some might be in an urban center in the city.
Yeah, you could be sitting on a park bench in the middle of a city, as I used to do in London, and there's still, you know, the seasons come through, and you feel the raindrops, you feel the wind on your face, you can maybe notice smells at times. There's certainly birds will fly over, or you're looking at the stars at night, or you're looking at the wet, dewy grass in the park. So really, it's available and accessible anywhere. And of course, I find the less messed up the environment is, you know, the more natural, the more wilder it is, I find it easier to drop into that more contemplative presence. But we can really do it sitting in our garden, or even looking at a plant on our desk. Like, I have a beautiful orchid here that I gaze at, you know, many times a day. And that can bring me as equally into mindful presence as gazing at an ancient redwood.
So you're really suggesting that it's up to our intention of saying, let's enter our experience this way. And I really like you've found a reason for every excuse that I may have not to do this. It's cold, it's rainy, I'm indoors, but there's a plant available to me. I can bundle up and prepare to be with the weather rather than against it. So I appreciate hearing that. I want to remind our listeners, I'm speaking with Mark Coleman, author of A Field Guide to Nature Meditation and Awake in the Wild. If you want to know more about his work, you can go to markcoleman.org. That's markcoleman.org. Or you can get there at newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find